Welcome back to the Pride of Detroit PODcast, prideofdetroit.com. You see, the word podcast has the first three letters POD. Those three letters can also stand for the abbreviation of Pride of Detroit. That's why we call it the Pride of Detroit PODcast. We repeat ourselves every time we do it. So it's the Pride of Detroit cast is how it comes out. But you know what? Don't bring that up, you're police. Happy Memorial Day. Go out there, grill. You talk about patriotism, I will wing some knowledge darts on top of your head and just in general ruin your day. So don't talk about that. Just have this hot dog, Ma. Have it. Wolf it down. Have a beer. Smoke a blunt. I'm Chris Perfett, the adequate host at Chris Perfett, P-E-R-F-E-T-T. I am out here. I am working myself off some damage done from last night. So this is going to be more adequate than ever. Jeremy Reisman, the fearless leader in exile, is here at Detroit on Lion once he reactivates. Until then, at Pride of Detroit. You're not going to lose those 4,000 followers.
Well, I don't need them. They don't need me as much as they think they need me. I don't need them. Maybe, who knows?
You need those numbers. You're valuable. Numbers. You're a thinkfluencer.
You know what? But I don't need numbers to prove to me my self-worth.
You know what, though? Numbers never lie. And that's your self-worth right there. Ryan Matthews. Back is the motherfucking rock guy. At Ryan underscore P-O-D. He's nursing some damage as well. I think it's more of the Fortnite variety, though. But how you doing, Ryan?
I'll be doing better once Jeremy and I can actually win a game.
Having a bad streak of luck there?
Always a bridesmaid. I think we finished second like 7 or 8 times over the course of this long holiday weekend. That's how I've spent my holiday weekend playing Fortnite. I don't have any friends that have boats. If you have a boat, you want to be friends at Ryan underscore POD on Twitter.
That's where you go. You know who's also friendless? Jeremy wanted to talk about OTAs, but you know what? We're going to indulge him this week because he's so excited that he even puts up the words like real football practices are here. That is the headline for our Ask POD thread mailbag coming up at the end of the show. And that is an oxymoron if I have ever seen one, Jeremy. There's no real football practices. The three words do not get combined together.
Man, when it's been 5 months since the last Lions game, football practices are the most exciting thing that's happened.
I'm just saying there's other football-like options out there. You don't need to do this to yourself.
But what do you listen to what you just said. There are other football-like options.
Yeah, I know, like the NBA.
You're trying to sell me margarine as butter. No, thank you.
Well, this isn't margarine you're selling me here with OTA talk. You're selling me... the oily mess on the that's still left on my grill grain.
Range. Little pre-butter.
It's not pre-butter. It's disgusting. Ryan, weigh in here. Stop playing Fortnite and weigh in here.
I'm not playing Fortnite. I'm being a good.
The lobby is readying up.
Participant.
This is why we need to get back to our recording software, Skype, so I can bully people into paying attention. No. What do we need to talk about with OTAs, Jeremy?
I mean, there's a ton of ways we can go with this, but Ryan and I were talking a little bit.
By the way, I just right before you do that, people love the Wayback Machine, so we're bringing it back this week. Giants Lions later on in the show, but continue, Jeremy.
I mean, obviously, with OTAs, you don't want to take too much into consideration, draw too many conclusions based on there's only been one practice open to the public. But there are some exciting things to think about, and there are some small, tiny developments that are worth at least bringing into the conversation and starting to, you know, develop our thoughts about the 2018 team. Use this as evidence as to maybe what may happen. One of the first stories that we put up about OTAs after Thursday's practice, which was open to the media, was on Miles Killebrew. And I think that's a name that a lot of Lions fans are curious about. Where is he going to play in 2018? Is he going to play? Is he even going to make the team? I mean, we've seen some of the Lions' third and later draft picks by Bob Quinn already basically get disposed of. And Killebrew obviously had a disappointing 2017 season. He comes out Gets a lot of first team reps because Glover Quinn is dealing with some family stuff in Texas, and Tavon Wilson is still in a red no contact jersey. So he's getting some first team reps. And as pointed out by a couple people, most notably, I think Kyle Meinke kind of focused on it. He struggled in coverage, got beat a couple times for touchdowns, was going to get beat for a couple more touchdowns had they not been dropped. And I think it's a valid question. Is Miles Killebrew done in Detroit? And granted, one practice, maybe he killed it. The other two that were closed, but this is a guy who didn't have a role last year, basically, with the team after the first couple weeks, and is really fighting for a job. And if he's coming out struggling, I don't know, man. I don't think this guy's a lock for the roster by any means. And if he wants to not only make the roster, but carve out a role to actually get some significant, you know, snaps this year, he's going to have to show something he's never shown before.
But is it safe to buy his jersey?
Never. Never buy a jersey. Never buy a jersey. Buy one with your name on the back.
Ew. No. I can't. What? What? Are you kidding me?
You're never on IR.
That's right.
You're never on IR.
Let me say this about Miles Killebrew. He's not safe. And I say this, and I think that we should all think this, because look no further than Antoine Williams, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, just because he's a Bob Quinn guy, and I know Patricia's coming in, but at the same time, you know, it seems like Miles Killebrew, like his ability to, I mean, in his rookie season, at least, it seemed like he was like the third down extra defensive back that would come in that would be able to cover tight ends and stuff, because he had the physicality and the size to do it. And he's only gotten bigger since his rookie season. Last year, like you mentioned, he did kind of take a step back. But I say, like, you know, look no further than what, you know, just because Bob Quinn spent a draft pick on this guy doesn't mean that he's necessarily going to stick around. And I think the one name that we should also take into consideration, too, is Tracy Walker. Like, I mean, if Miles Killebrew isn't playing up to the level that they expect him to take that next step, because it's really interesting, you know, it always comes back to Bob Quinn's statements about, you know, the sound bites he has where he says, you know, it's not about how they really play their first year. It's about how a draft class plays in their second and their third year, like seeing them take the steps, you know, to get better and to start fitting in, because it's not always like it's not always an upward progression. It's not always an upward trend of progression, and progression isn't always an upward trend. So like, if Killebrew's not, I don't know. Like, I'm just really interested to see this camp battle play out, because there are quite a few defensive backs that are going to be jockeying for a role on this team.
Yeah, I mean, you throw in, they brought back Tavon Wilson for a couple of years. He's had experience inside of a Patricia defense. Obviously, Glover Quinn is a lock. Even, I mean, a guy like Charles Washington, at least a guy like that brings significant special teams, as does Tracy Walker. So you see all these guys that are going to bring something to the team, whether it's in a starting role or on special teams. And you know that Matt Patricia's defense does, you know, like to employ 2-3 safety looks a lot. So there's room for Killebrew, but he's going to have to prove his worth against guys like Charles Washington, who's just as young as Killebrew, but probably on a way cheaper contract. And it's just, I don't know. It's obviously still very, very early for Miles, but he's on notice at this point. He's very much on notice.
All right, what else?
Especially too, I was going to say, especially too, because we don't really know the role that Quandre Diggs will play quite yet. I mean, is he going to play nickel? Is T's going to play some nickel? Everything's just kind of up in the air at this point. But like you said, Miles Killebrew on notice, and it's not. I also don't want to say, like, let's not overreact to, like, you know, the first week of OTAs, but at the same time, it's like every practice counts, right?
Yeah, and worth noting about Quandre Diggs is that he was exclusively at safety on Thursday. Again, that may just be a thing because Quinn was out and Tavon had the no contact on, but the fact that he's still taking reps there is at least somewhat significant.
Can't help but notice while we're sitting here, I'm reading something from a few, like, I don't know, this was 5 days ago. Was this after we recorded our podcast? We were talking about DeAndre Goolsby for UDFAs and he was cut
last week. Yep.
Yeah. Cut to make room for Trevor Bates, more former Patriots. This is totally going to work, taking the Patriots leftovers. We haven't talked enough about that. No, that was just a random note.
Head coach does that. They get former players that they're comfortable with. This isn't just a let's be the Patriots thing.
It is. Let's be the Patriots. I want to talk about something else from OTAs, which is Frank Ragnow, which we still don't know where he's playing. I will also contend that it doesn't matter where he's playing. But, you know,
why do you say that?
Because it don't matter, because this line needs help at either position. And Graham Glasgow is going to play somewhere. And I mean, I think ideally I'd like to see Ragnow playing at center, but he would also be playing there as a rookie. So there's trade-offs to both ends of it. And right now it just seems like there is still no decision made yet on where Frank is playing. And I'm going to call him Frank for the rest of time now. Frank.
Yeah. So Patricia said this week specifically that no decision has been made yet. We're going to be trying out a bunch of people at a bunch of different positions. Just, I mean, he's still getting to know the players, still getting to know their strengths. They're still getting to know him and the scheme and all that sort of stuff. But every little bit of information that we've gotten basically from Frank Ragnow watch, from Frank watch, if you want to call it, is that he's going to play guard.
Franks.
I think he's going to be a guard. He's never been seen as center with the ones. The only time I've seen him play center through mini camp or rookie mini camp, I should say, or, you know, any of the pictures or whatever, is with a second team. So they're making sure he has center capabilities, but he's mostly getting practice at left guard from what we can tell from any sort of highlights or photos that have come from OTAs. It's him at guard, whether it's left guard or he was actually working at right guard with some of the second team. And it's worth noting that last two first round draft picks, granted they weren't under Patricia, they were started from their starting position from day one. Essentially, they got a little bit of practice elsewhere, but basically most, if not all, of Taylor Decker's snaps were at left tackle in OTAs during his rookie year, and Jared Davis, same thing with middle linebacker. So again, it's early, but precedent shows us that it's not insignificant than Frank Ragnow is mostly being in snaps at left guard.
Cool.
Is that the right decision? Do you think, Ryan? I know Chris just said he'd kind of prefer him at center. Are you cool with Ragnow at left guard?
I think I kind of even agree with Chris just saying either or. I mean, it's really, yeah. I think it's where the Lions are going to fit him most comfortably, because I think what's important is that we should also remember that Frank is the rookie. Glasgow is now going on to be a 3-year veteran. I think that they know what Glasgow can do. I think Glasgow knows that he can play like either position. It's always nice to have that versatility, and even more so now with Ragnow, because you probably want to put him in the spot that he can maybe be the most comfortable and kind of maybe ease his way. I don't know if necessarily they say, okay, Frank, you're the guard this year. Maybe he ends up being the center of the future. Who knows? But I think what matters the most is trying to create a situation in which the rookie is the most comfortable. And I know a lot of the responsibilities on the line fall on the center's shoulders too. So maybe that's something they don't want to necessarily saddle Ragnow with this early on. And I think it kind of comes back to, like, you know, we saw certain players at certain positions in OTAs before, like when Decker immediately started playing left tackle, like, okay, like they're going to go with that. So, I mean, we're seeing Ragnow at guard. It seems like that's going to be, I think that's where he's going to end up playing is left guard.
Wouldn't it be kind of interesting if he took almost the same kind of path that Glasgow took, where it's like, okay, you're going to be left guard because we got a center right now, but, you know, once that's done, once Travis Swanson is out the door, you'll be the center. And there's just going to be this endless cycle of left guard to center to off the team. Obviously, that's not what they want to do, but it's kind of possible if you think about it. Glasgow has been okay, but he hasn't been phenomenal.
Yeah, I think that's a guy who, if there's any Lions that I'm really interested in seeing, like taking like the step that seems necessary in order to think that they're going to be like a long term fixture with the team, I think Glasgow is like one of those players that really stands out. It's like, OK, you know, Bob Quinn's invested so much in Wagner at right tackle, you know, drafting in the first round with his first you know, pick as a GM. He took Taylor Decker. Going out and signing TJ Lang to a sizable contract. Like, he's taken these steps, and then with Glasgow, it just seems like, all right, if he's going to be like a long-term fixture, like he's the only guy on that line that like either didn't like, I mean, he was a third round pick. I mean, yeah. And granted, that is a pretty high pick. All things considered, you expect your third round players to be contributors. But I really think that like it's this year where Glasgow is like, all right, let's see if he's going to be a part of the team's plans like going forward.
Yeah, this is a big year for him, I would say. And the Lions kind of need it all to come together this year because TJ Lang has such a big contract and he's kind of towards the end of his career. And because they still have Taylor Decker and Glasgow and now Ragnow all on rookie contracts, like they don't have a long time for this whole new refined offensive line to get it all together. They kind of need it to happen now, and I think you're right that this is a huge year for Glasgow to kind of take the lead in progressing.
All right, let's save it there. I've got one more question about OTAs later, but we'll pop it in later. I do want to think I want to move on to the Wayback Machine right now. Get us all thinking back to that good old Giants Lions time from 2017. Stick around, PODcast rolls along. Wayback music. I don't really have it. I should probably go grab the clip from
Wayne's World. Did you just go Wayne's World
on us? Yeah. But we do. I did it last week too. Were you not paying attention?
Usually not.
That's fair. Wayback Machine. We call it this because we are going back, rewinding on the season. We have no official name for this yet, no official music. We're just been rewinding on the 2017 season because I feel that is far more important than all the nattering we do in the off season. And I want to look back and have fun looking at the Lions season now that we've been able to put 16 games into perspective. And let's talk about week 2, Monday Night Football, dun, 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 Lions Giants. Final score, Detroit Lions 24, New York Giants 10, in a game where I think we all believed that would be a marquee win right before we saw the Giants just crash and burn for an entire quarter of a year.
Yeah, this was, especially coming off the heels when the Giants kind of ruined the Lions 2016 run and that awful game right near Christmas at Giant Stadium. Going back there on Monday night and winning convincingly sure felt good at the time.
Well, it's not even that. I'm just talking about the prestige of it. I think people were talking, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, Ryan, people were talking about this Giants team being a contender for the NFC East over likes of the Eagles and the Cowboys at the time. Like, the Giants were one of those teams where it's like, yeah, they could be going places.
Yeah, I mean, I thought people were talking about the Giants from a national perspective that they could have even been contenders for the NFC, like, just in general. Like, as long as their defense stayed the course. I mean, this was a team that in 2016 went 11-5 and had a really good defense. And the wheels completely came off because they had an auto mechanic as their head coach.
not always the best person to put in charge there, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, things got ugly for them, but you know, in perspective, week 2, the big storylines, as I remember, because how could you get away from the talk about whether or not Odell Beckham Jr. was going to play, whether or not, I think that's the only thing they talked about. Because this was the Lions' first nationally televised game of the season, too. They played on Monday night. So like you mentioned, it was a big game for Detroit. And I think that with what Jeremy said, they won so convincingly that I think immediately this put the Lions into the discussion of, okay, maybe they might be like legit. They just went on the road. This was a marquee win for, you know, the Lions this early in the season.
What was the thing that Rich Eisen said? Like, I think when they were doing the Rich Eisen show, the Tuesday after that, where he's like, if I told you that a team, you know, one team went to the playoffs last year and beat the Giants at home, we'd be talking about them. So let's talk about, and he tries to talk about the Detroit Lions for a little bit, but there it just, you know, him pointing out, it's like, look, this team looked incredibly good beating probably a playoff bound team early on in the season. So, you know, instead, as he points out, the talk became about rightly so at the time, though. Now that we're looking back, because the national talk wasn't, oh my God, the Lions might be good. It was, what the hell is wrong with the Giants? And as we found out, that happened to be the true part. But I think the Lions did look pretty good there. I mean, they got in 5 sacks on Eli Manning that night. And I think we were all ready to look at Ezekiel Ansah with 3 of those sacks and say that he was back. Even though knowing at the time, and I think we discussed this on the podcast, we recognized he was playing against Ereck Flowers.
Right. Yes. And then kind of from a macro perspective, I think the biggest narrative I took from this game was that the Lions won a game with their defense, something that they didn't do all of last year, something that they were victimized by the Giants last year. The Giants beat them with defense last year. This year, the Lions did it to them. You know, I think they only had like 200 some yards of offense this entire game. Yeah, 257 yards of offense, which it would end up being like the third fewest all season. Stafford threw the ball like, what, 20 times? Not even 20 times, I think. 21 times. How often have we seen the Lions win a game with Stafford? How often have we ever seen Matthew Stafford only throw the ball 21 times? Almost never. And so that was really what had me excited for this game, is we saw the Lions winning in a different way than they normally do. We knew that Stafford could go toe to toe with someone and, you know, throw 3 touchdowns in the fourth quarter, you know, put together 1 game winning drive in the fourth quarter. We saw him do it the previous week against the Cardinals, put together a really good fourth quarter. But we, up until now, we hadn't seen the Lions win a game like this since the 2014 season. So that's what had me really excited after this game.
What do you remember, Ryan? What was your kind of immediate reaction in the aftermath of this game?
I think my immediate reaction was kind of looking forward and saying, and I mean, we'll talk about it next week, obviously, but the Falcons were on deck and they were an undefeated team. And it was like, this might be like the marker game. Like, the Lions beat the Giants on the road, a great win. If they can beat the Falcons, all of a sudden now you're talking about knocking off the, you know, the NFC, you know, champion Falcons, and then all of a sudden the Lions would finally ascend to that talking point. Like you mentioned, you know, Eisen tried to get people to talk about the Lions after this win, and they just weren't quite there yet. It was already kind of like looking forward. I was like, all right, like that's a big win. You know, we talked earlier in the season, I think, like, if the Lions could escape their first 8 weeks of the season with a 4-4 record, that would be like a win in and of itself. So the fact that they're already off to a 2-0 start, you know, beating a Cardinals team that, you know, some of us thought might have been like an NFC West contender the week before, now beating a team that we thought would be an NFC East contender. I mean, funny how, you know, the season's played out for both the Cardinals and the Giants, but
I think that's the theme to the start of the schedule. Yeah, I think that was the theme to the start of the schedule, though, is like, we all thought this would be a lot tougher than it was. So we pinned a lot on those first couple of wins.
And I remember I jokingly said after the game, like, oh, congratulations, Giants, you're going to have a losing record this season because Lions can't beat anyone with a winning record on the road.
Why'd you do that? But I mean, okay, but I think looking back, there were some signs there that, A, this wasn't as good of a Giants team that the Lions were facing, and B, that the Lions weren't really, like, even winning by 4-2 touchdowns here, probably some warning signs. And I think the first, again, comes, you mentioned them resting on their defense a lot. But looking at the offensive spread here, Matt Stafford only threw for 122 yards, I believe. And then Amir Abdullah shows up on 17 carries, picks up 86 yards, averaging about, you know, five there. And then Stafford, of course, I think he ran for a bunch, for a few, quite a few yards himself. So what do you take of the offensive performance out of this game?
Well,
Jeremy, remember in our pre-show real quick when I said that Eric Ebron would have five catches for 40 yards. And in the first half, he had five catches for 42 yards. And then I think that was it.
Yep. We played over under. You just barely squeaked by, but you squeaked by in the first half.
I know. Oh, yeah.
Well, OK, with the offense, this week produced a big argument between me and the commenters at Pride of Detroit, because like you said, Amir Abdullah, 86 yards, 5.1 a carry.
And I'm going to do the real quick thing though that Ryan likes to do. I'm going to take away his longest. So that meant 16 carries for 52 yards.
This is exactly that's what I'm Jeremy's talking schtick. About. That is my shtick.
Oh, that's his. Okay.
Yeah. And I wrote an article the following week, said the Lions running game isn't as good as you think. Boy, does that look smart now. But before I even get to patting myself on the back, I tweeted out a stat like this. Also not a very popular. I almost got ratioed on this tweet, but it says Amir Abdullah had two rushes on Monday Night Football that combined for 58 yards. The other 27 running back carries in the rest of the game combined for 57.
Yeah, baby.
Not good.
And people say, you know, actually, Jim Caldwell even said this week, he says, I love it when people take away the two biggest carries of the yard because blah, blah, blah. It doesn't matter, blah, blah. I don't buy that for a second. If you're unsuccessful on 90% of your runs, if you're averaging under 2 yards a carry or just over 2 yards a carry on 90% of your runs, but you have two ones that go for 30 yards, that's not good. I'm sorry. It's not. I statistically broke it down and said, hey, here's what good running teams look like. Let me take away the two top rushes of these guys. Guess what? They still look really good.
And let's remind everyone that at the end of the year, Football Outsiders DVOA values 30th rank minus 20.2% in rushing offense.
Yeah. And so it was good at the very, very tail end of that game. The Lions did have their last offensive possession of the game. They were able to run out the clock, and part of that was because of a couple really good rushes. I think one was by Theo Riddick. It was like a 3rd and 15, and I think he picked up 15 or something like that. But for the majority of this game, the Lions did not have a running game. And for some reason, people came out of this game thinking they did. It looked a little bit better than it did last year. I mean, to the date, that was the closest Amir Abdullah had gotten to 100 rushing yards. In a couple weeks, he'll get it a little bit closer. But I mean, if you watch the game closely at all, you'd see that the Lions did not have a running game in this game. Their offense in general was not that good, but I think we excused it a little bit because the Giants' defense was so good the year prior that we're like, eh, that's fine. Like, the Lions put up 24 points against the Giants on the road. That's more than they needed. So we're fine with it.
And now looking at it, what is it? It's a game where the Lions feasted on a really, 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 really bad team.
Well, they feasted on a really bad team, but their offense only scored 17 points. Like,
yeah, I gave you that Stafford stat there, only 122 yards. Eli almost doubled him in yards.
Yeah, and I mean, that tends to happen when you're playing from behind. But regardless, Jamal Agnew. We haven't even talked about Jamal Agnew.
Yep.
The Jamal Agnew coming out party. An 88-yard, the punt return where he... where he stole Brad Wing's ankles. Yes. Poor guy. But yeah, I mean, this was the Jamal Agnew coming out party. This was the moment when I think the Lions, I mean, cause we'd seen glimpses of it, like in the scrimmage that they have at Ford Field, Jamal Agnew had a nice return. You know, we'd seen like glimpses of it. And then this was when it was on a national stage, Monday Night Football. The Lions were only up 17-10. This was the play that kind of put the game on ice, you know, in the fourth quarter. Yeah. So
also, this was the welcome back Matt Prater game with a 56-yard field goal. Just in case you forgot.
There's one more storyline that came from this game. I don't know if you guys remember it, but this is the game that Jared Davis got injured. And remember how he got injured?
Oh, the Odell Beckham Jr. block.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. People wanted Odell's head after that.
They absolutely did. And he did get fined for it. He didn't get suspended like I think a lot of Lions fans wanted to see. And I never really understood that because, I don't know, with blocks like that, you always have to contend about intent. And it's so hard to figure out intent from an instantaneous hit. To me, it just seemed unfortunate, right? I'm watching it right now. And he tries to hit the guy in the shoulder. And unfortunately, Jared Davis goes head first because of the contact into someone else. Like his injury wasn't because of the hit, right? It was because of the contact that he made with someone else. So to me, I don't know. It just seemed like a weird narrative that, you know, Odell Beckham already had a lot of haters out there. And I think a lot of Lions fans were a little salty because, like Ryan mentioned, he was getting all the pregame coverage.
Literally all the pregame coverage.
Yes. But, you know, it also made me a little nervous to see Jared Davis go out there and take a pretty significant hit to the head this early in his career, especially when I had just donned his jersey for the first time.
Son of a bitch.
And then wasn't it was it Hasselbeck, like in the pregame show, that like they were showing like this is how they're probably going to be taping Odell Beckham Jr.'s ankle? Like, what?
Yep.
Yeah, like it was a mess. Yeah. But yeah, the Jared Davis stuff was super unfortunate. And then, you know what, now thinking back to it, you know, you want to talk about how, you know, Davis did struggle mightily in the beginning of the season, and a lot of that had to do with his ability in pass coverage. And you wonder how maybe something like an injury like this, I'm not trying to give him an excuse or anything, but like an injury like this one, you know, this early in his rookie season, like maybe this derailed some or any, you know, any progress that he was making. Or maybe this kind of maybe like stunted his development a little bit, just because, I mean, it's a head trauma injury. And to add to that, I mean, he's a rookie. So, you know, he had one honest, good regular season game underneath his belt. You know, this game he gets injured. You know, maybe that has something to do with, you know, how he struggled early on.
Possible. And I just want to correct it. Odell didn't get fined for the block either. It was a simple block in the back, essentially. It should have been called. It wasn't called on the field, but it'd be kind of silly to even fine him now that I think about it. And they didn't.
All right, let's take a break here, and we're going to continue along on the Pride of Detroit POD cast, kind of a more kickback corner coming on up. All right, we're back from the Wayback Machine. That was the Lions Giants last segment. Now we're here back in the present day. And I think in honor of the damage we've taken over Memorial Day weekend, we're just going to kick back here. I did have one kind of follow-up OTA question, which has been about Quandre Diggs, who's been getting a lot of play lately. I mean, I think he's had a couple of really decent seasons the last couple of years. And there are legitimate questions as to where he is going to start with this offense. I think it's going to be curious to see if they do keep him as a corner, as a nickel corner still with the new defensive schemes coming in.
I mean, well, we talked about it a little in the first segment, and I don't know. I mean, it's to me, it still remains to be seen. The fact that he played safety on Thursday during Thursday's practice means very little to me, just because they were so shorthanded at safety with Quinn and Wilson being out. But it wouldn't surprise me to see him stay at safety. He played well enough, I think, last year, even though Pro Football Focus didn't seem to like him there. Three straight games with interceptions at safety after, I think, I'm not sure if he had one before that in his career. And the fact that we're going to see a lot of three safety looks, I mean, just kind of to me shows you that he's going to be apt there. And I think the truth is we're probably looking at it wrong, whether he's going to be in nickel corner or safety. The answer is probably both. Yep. He's going to have some looks at nickel corner. He's going to have some looks at safety. I think the game plan with him is very similar to the game plan that they're going to have with their third round draft pick, whose name is escaping me right now because it's early and I'm tired. Thank you. Tracy Walker. They kind of have similar skill sets there. And who knows, maybe Tracy Walker just becomes Quandre Diggs when Diggs's contract is up, if the Lions aren't willing to sign him to an extension. But this just brings you back to the buzzwords that have been coming out ever since Matt Patricia has been hired. And that's versatility and multiples and guys just, you know, playing every role that they possibly can. And I don't know, it makes it hard to have a discussion about these guys because you want to fit them in these nice little neat boxes of like Devon Kennard. Is he going to be a left end or is he going to be an outside linebacker? Both is almost certainly the answer, but it makes it hard to have a discussion. But at the same time, it makes sense for these guys, right? They can do multiple things. So have them go out there and do multiple things for the team.
Like, the other thing that stood out to me from Quandre last season, obviously, too, like aside from the interceptions, but like the safety play was like his tackling ability and like making big plays on the ball. I think back to the play that he made. I want to say that it was on OJ Howard in the Tampa Bay game when he forced the fumble.
Yep. I think to that Steelers game, it was a third down and they threw to Antonio Brown on that crossing route.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, completely upended him. And that was one of those things where it was like, man, I didn't know Diggs had it like that. You know, yeah. I didn't know that Diggs was, you know, because he's such a small guy, you know, he's only 5'8". And you wonder, you know, does it matter that he's big? You know, maybe Patricia sees him as, you know, maybe a guy that he can bring in on third downs when he wants to blitz from, you know, the secondary. You know, bring in Diggs on that. Maybe like I think to your larger point, Jeremy, I completely agree with you, though. Like when you look at a guy like Diggs or you look at a guy like Kennard, you look at a lot of these pieces that the Lions are assembling. Even Tracy Walker, like Pro Football Focus had that breakdown of like how he lined up, you know, at safety, outside corner, nickel corner, like all of these different things that he can do. Like Diggs, the answer to where these guys are going to be playing is just yes. Like I mean Quandre Diggs might be the Lions' new nose tackle. I don't know, we'll see.
They did say that Tracy Walker played a little bit of edge at Louisiana Lafayette.
That's wild. I love football. I miss football.
I do too, but I know what you also love. And I want to just do this because I'm just tired and I have nothing else on this list. So it's getting into mailbag early, but I want to talk about LeBron James.
Yeah.
Y'all watching some damn greatness out here.
If you could, would you sign LeBron James to play tight end for the Lions right now?
I'd sign him to play quarterback.
That's disrespect.
he could play. Listen, the answer is he could play whatever position he wants except for general manager.
I think just people forget that he's 6'9", 260 pounds. Like, that's a tight end.
It absolutely is. Jeremy's muted his mic. He wants nothing to do with what we're talking here. He's gonna come to Detroit, isn't he?
There was also a garbage truck. All right, I was trying to be.
Oh, thoughtful. Yeah, we had that problem last time. What were you saying, Ryan?
The garbage truck seems metaphorical for how Jeremy feels about this segment. Yep. I'm just trying to ground this in some sort of Lions talk, but I can't. Why even bother doing that? LeBron James is the greatest team sport player ever.
This is a sports podcast at its heart, and I would be remiss going a single week after not talking about LeBron James, who is probably one of the greatest, as you said right there, team athletes of all time. Jordan people can get out. I'm not trying to. I see our friend Rob Zaglinski has been going on today. Is like, I hate the Jordan LeBron comparison. I'm right there with him. But you know what? It's because LeBron's clearly the favorite here.
I just need to see more Shannon Sharpe in LeBron James jerseys and masks and black miles hang out of his mouth.
I'm definitely muting myself
This is dropping on Tuesday. I will make you a bet right now. Folks, go turn on Fox Sports 1. See if you can find Shannon Sharpe. I will guarantee you he is not going to have a shirt on. Actually, he might bring in a live goat. One of those two things is going to be there sometime this week on Undisputed. I think I called it First Take. I don't remember.
He's just going to ride into the studio shirtless on top of a goat like he's Vladimir Putin.
That's going to be a really big goat. Shannon Sharpe is a very big man.
It's a very sturdy goat.
Very sturdy goat. You were mentioning about how to tie it to the Lions. I mean, the only thing I can really think of is if Barry Sanders had decided to keep playing for a longer time. And even then, like, I mean, we get into talks about we talk about greatest quarterback a lot. I don't think we've ever really talked much about, maybe just because of what the position has become, but we don't talk about greatest running back of all time anymore.
Well, because very rarely can the greatest running back carry your team to 8 straight championships.
Yeah, you can't really sustain it either. Like, we talk about how great Le'Veon Bell is, and then, you know, 2 years later, we're wondering if he's going to be on the same team, or, you know, was it Jamal Charles or David Johnson? It's really hard to sustain that kind of thing.
It is. This is going to pain me to say this. The last guy that we saw have sustained excellence at the running back position that I think more or less probably quote unquote carried his team to a championship and multiple championships at that, Emmitt Smith.
I think that's right. Yeah, no, I think that's.
You think he carried those teams?
Absolutely. Dude, I think Aikman's like low key way overrated.
But he also had Michael Irvin, who I don't think is overrated.
No, but listen to this. I mean, from 91 to 95. So you're talking, you know, multiple Super Bowl champion, you know, three of those teams. In the 90s there, 1,563 yards, 1,713 yards, 1,486 yards, 1,484 yards, 1,773 yards. Like, and I mean, four of those five seasons, he led the league in rushing.
Right.
25 touchdowns in 1995, 21 touchdowns in 1994. Like, just, I guess it's because of the position. Like, you just don't see, you know, like, you know, Chris alluded to, it's this idea that like the running back position is so volatile now. Like, right. I mean, you have Pittsburgh, you know, Pittsburgh is going to literally run Le'Veon Bell into the ground this season. They're going to have him touch the ball like 400 times. And then they're going to just say, sayonara, see you later. We'll figure it out from here. But yeah, why are we going to pay you?
Yeah, no one. Well, that's the other problem, too, is like in the past, I think guys like Emmitt Smith, you would pay them because it was the right thing to do. And you couldn't really imagine a time without it. Now everyone's trying to micro game what happens next and everything. LeBron, to that effect, LeBron's kind of the last of, even in the NBA, the last generation of that superstar where it's like you can't live without LeBron James. Like if he leaves tomorrow, Cleveland is once again a lottery team, just like what happened when he left for Miami.
Mm-hmm.
They're absolutely bottom of the East because you can't tell me nothing because I've watched what happens when LeBron James is off the court for the Cavaliers. I've been sitting here thinking, though, I think we were too tuned in as far as running backs, although I will say like probably the equivalent could have been Bo Jackson if he hadn't ended up injuring himself out of playing football completely.
Yes,
Let me make another analogy to a football player here. And you can tell me like, if you think, cause I think LeBron would have absolutely done better than this person, but this person was so dominant for so much of their career. Deion Sanders.
Deion Sanders is an interesting case study just because.
Is it the two sport thing?
I think the two sport thing. And then also like, he just kind of, you know what? He kind of had, I feel like, a little tinge of LeBron to him in the sense that, like, he was just like a mercenary. Like, Atlanta, San Francisco, Dallas. Like, he was just willing to go, like, where he was going to win. And, I mean, I don't think it was any coincidence that, like, where he went, he won. But, I don't know, just, like, the willingness to, like, move from team to team, which, I mean, I can't wait to see where LeBron goes.
I think that mercenary thing is very relevant today. I think Dion was just kind of the forerunner for it because he understood, he knew that everyone would regard him as the greatest as long as he was around winning. Like, I'm sure statistically you could show me certain, maybe there's someone who statistically is better than Dion. Like, I'm sure, I don't know where it would be. I'm saying, like, maybe there's a Randy Moss argument. I don't have the stats in front of me to say that. But I'm just saying, we see it with free agency all the time. Where do guys want to go? They want to go and win. And you know what? The fans enable it. The fans, even the fans here in Detroit, to bring it back to a Detroit point, Jeremy. How many times have we seen some fans, the Lions, talking about, like, you know, guys near his career go try to play with the Patriots to try to win a ring? Or even some Lions fans who are like, oh, yeah, if Calvin comes back and plays for the Patriots, hard to fault him because he wants to get that ring. He wants to win. He wants to win, and that's the only way people regard them in this conversation with Deion Sanders is if they have wins. That right there, Ryan, right there, six rings, the specter over LeBron James, six rings.
Yeah, it's kind of fun. It's kind of funny the disconnect there that there is, though, between basketball and then other sports. You know, yeah. Like basketball, it's frowned upon. Like, everybody gets their two jabs in it, like Kevin Durant for joining the Warriors. Everybody was on LeBron's case for when he joined the Heat. Like,
the decision, yeah.
You don't see that, I guess, so much in football. Like, football, like you said, they kind of, like, I mean, when Randy Moss went to the Patriots, or, you know, the talk of, you know, if Calvin Johnson wanted to come back and, you know, try to win a ring with some team, if it was New England, like, they would almost, like, applaud that.
I think it's just an aspect of how much you can change a team, though. Like, an individual in basketball can do so much for one team to turn it around. Like you said, LeBron James leaves Cleveland, suddenly they're a lottery pick. So once he leaves Cleveland, obviously that's a huge deal to them. But with some of these other guys, like Calvin Johnson, the Lions have gotten along pretty okay without him, right? So if he leaves, then, you know, it doesn't leave a huge crater from where he left.
I think this would be a lot better team with Calvin Johnson. But yeah, I mean, I'm measuring here probably adding a win, maybe two, with Calvin Johnson, which, yeah. I mean, depending on the season, it does put you in the playoffs, but I don't think it makes me think that this is a favorite to win the NFC for sure. Yeah, there's not that massive swing.
Well, I think it goes back to the, were you going to say quarterback?
Yeah, I was going to say the only thing it does do that is quarterback, and the idea of the mercenary quarterback is not something that exists in the NFL.
But we definitely condemn quarterbacks that choose where they want to go, right? Like, people still bang on Eli Manning for what he did during the draft, and
I think Eli's a punk, but I don't think that's because he decided to change. But I mean, even then, like, I don't know how many people bang on him because his option was to go play in San Diego for the Chargers. People are like, yeah, no, that's, I mean, we have that in our history too. John Elway flexed on right. Indianapolis. I mean, Baltimore at the time for the Colts.
And I think at the time people were really pissed, and I think kind of rightfully so.
No, I don't think as many people were pissed because the Colts were trash and their owner was a drunk who then moved them out of Baltimore in the middle of the night.
Well, that's a whole different thing, but
sure. But I think people understood at the time that Baltimore was a tire fire, that you would not fault someone from deciding, I don't want to go play there. We have this conversation every week with every draft time with Cleveland about whether a draft pick is just going to decide, no, I don't want to go to Cleveland.
Right. But I think most people don't like it if a guy comes out and says, yeah, I'm not going to play in Cleveland prior to the draft, that's viewed as a big red flag because we're sold this idea in the NFL that there's a salary cap for a reason and the draft order is there for a reason to even the playing field. And so if a player goes against that, especially a quarterback, then yeah, people get mad. The only time they don't get mad is when it's at the end of someone's career. Like, if Larry Fitzgerald were to come out and say, hey, I want to go play for the Cowboys or something. Not that I think
it's journeyman. But I mean, like, OK, you're pointing to a lot of things like early in their careers when they're just talking about the draft. But there's no quarterback who has, after one contract, then decided to jump to another city.
Right.
Aside from like maybe Drew Brees. But I don't think when Drew Brees joined the Saints, people were thinking they were getting the Drew Brees.
Right. Yeah, no. He was coming off injury. Serious injury.
Yeah. So
this doesn't happen.
This doesn't happen. I wish it did, though. Be a lot more exciting.
The last one was Peyton Manning.
Pretty much. And again, that was kind of the open box special that Denver was picking up because the Colts thought he was done.
Yeah. Speaking of Colts quarterbacks that may be done.
Do we have a mail? I would love to talk about Andrew Luck sometime. We'll have to see if there's a mailbag question. Speaking of which, I've now killed enough time that we can go on to the mailbag safely. What do you guys say?
Yay, we did it.
We did it. I didn't have to talk more about OTAs. Coming up next, mailbag time. Mail time. Hashtag ask POD. As always, get in your stuff. We talk about it. We'll find things to talk about. We'll have fun. Jeremy, do we have any reviews?
Sadly, this week, we do not.
That's fine. We've been riding these people pretty hard for like 2 years now for reviews.
Don't let them off the hook. This podcast survives on reviews and ratings. It does.
Okay, well, if we'll have it your way then. Ryan, let's talk about some wrestling then. No?
Yeah, baby. Okay. Money in the bank.
You just lost you lost your opportunity. I don't understand what that even means.
You don't understand what money in the bank means?
No, I know what that means. I don't understand what wrestling talk has to do with reviews. You want to get negative reviews?
Do you remember when we used to threaten people with wrestling talk?
Oh, yeah. No, I remember that.
Yeah,
I'm not saying we should threaten our people, but we should encourage people. If they like what they're listening to, it helps us to find more people like you.
Man,
that like
negative reinforcement over positive. Negative reinforcement over positive.
Meetings. So you're one of those corporal punishment kind of people, huh?
Hey, can I here's what I want to do. if we don't get reviews every week, I'm going to ask Jeremy one wrestling question, and I'm going to ask him if he can explain like a certain aspect of wrestling. And then you have to listen to him struggle through trying to explain. Actually, you know what? That would actually probably be a good segment.
I explain squares. How about I just try to explain squares every week so we don't get reviews?
I want to never hear about squares in my life.
I didn't
what do you think
either.
Money in the bank is, Jeremy?
There's some like briefcase on a ladder or something, and if you get it, you get to like cash in a championship bout or something stupid like that.
I mean, I was on board with everything you said until you called it stupid.
Well, speaking of that, let's get into our first question from Clytus. Which WWE superstar are you most looking forward to be part of the Thursday night NFL broadcast in 2019? I'm only bringing this up mostly on the football side because this is Fox. If you're not a wrestling fan, Fox picked up the rights to SmackDown and they're going to be broadcasting it on Friday. And goddamn, you know good and well as I do that Fox, who loves the crossover even more than ESPN, they will have pro wrestlers in the studio shows next to Terry Bradshaw. You thought it was bad with Rob Riggle. Oh, no. The Fox studio is about to get a lot worse.
Oh,
we all know the answer. We all know who they will bring in, right? It's Hulk Hogan.
I'm just saying when there is going to be a pay-per-view on a Sunday during an NFL Sunday, and there will be like Roman Reigns sitting there glowering while Terry Bradshaw tries to crack wise with him.
I thought the Colin Cowherd crossovers from last year were bad.
Dude, Colin Cowherd's even like, that was his big thing for the longest time too, calling about, oh, wrestling fans, they smell, they stink. And then I remember when they got the deal done, it was like, this is big news.
Yeah. He's the worst at everything.
At everything.
Racist ass Hulk Hogan.
Not Ray Stockinus asking us, former Lion Clay Harbor is on The Bachelorette. Which Lions player would get you to watch the show if they were on it?
I was shocked when I heard about Clay Harbor being on The Bachelorette, because like I recognized the name and I was like, I'm pretty sure he played for the Lions at some point.
I remember a good name like Clay Harbor.
He played in 12 games in 2016.
Yeah, it wasn't that long ago, right? You're kind of our Lions football / reality show crossover guy.
That's not me.
You were our Dancing with the Stars correspondent when Calvin Johnson was on, so I kind of expect weekly reviews from The Bachelorette now.
You know what?
If this is the Lions' answer to the Aaron Rodgers brother being on The Bachelorette, then like this is not a good look.
I totally think I need to watch The Bachelorette now, and I think I need to write articles about Clay Harper being on there.
Because there's the Pro Football Focus guy too, right?
Yeah, Mike Renner. Yeah.
Oh my God. We know Lions fans hate Pro Football Focus, so I guess they should be rooting for him over the Pro Football Focus guy.
I want both of you right now. How many career catches did Clay Harper have with the Detroit Lions?
20.
Three.
Three is the correct answer.
Yes.
Jesus. Wow, I thought it was used a lot more. Yards. Wait, what position did he play? Was he a tight end? Oh, okay. I thought he played a different role. Okay, that's fine. All right, next question here. From Ty Finch, how long do you wear a pair of jeans before you feel compelled to wash them? Please have Jeremy answer separately because he obviously has interesting personal hygiene habits.
Okay. All right, with jeans, I don't know. With jeans, I have like four in the rotation in general. And then I don't know, I probably wash them every 3 weeks or so. It used to be a lot more because I used to work at that dog kennel, and like 2 days worth of dog slobber is enough to just, I mean, you could see it essentially. So I'd have to do it basically every week. But yeah, I mean, I don't know, jeans are tough. They don't get that dirty unless they get like a stain or something on them. Those suckers can last a couple weeks to a month.
I don't remember the last, I mean, I do remember the last time I washed jeans, but I kind of, those are one of those pieces of clothes I forget about washing.
You don't need to. It ruins the denim.
Like that, yeah, that's the point. Like my favorite pair of black jeans are about to be ruined because they've kind of gotten softened because of the repeated washes it's gone through. Like, unless you've got like some like crazy dirt on them or something, you don't need to wash jeans. Or like you've been sweating in them nonstop.
See, we came together here. I like it.
I don't.
Ryan, are you about to tell us how gross we are?
What?
Almost got through a whole podcast with that one.
So close. All right, next question then. Let's bring up something that will get Ryan back in here. From Sebastian Enke, he wants to ask, Kanye West or Drake?
I'm so overhearing about Drake invoicing good music for $100,000 for reviving Pusha T's career.
Is that Drake? I don't know about the latest drama. Can you fill me in and probably some of our people at home who aren't as cool?
Here's the drama. Drake has a ghostwriter named Quentin who wrote raps for him. Pusha T doesn't like that because Pusha T writes his raps. So he decides that he's going to continue to poke fun at Drake and remind him that he writes his own raps and Drake does not. Drake is going to continue to big dog him while he has all the money and clout and all of these loyal listeners, quote unquote loyal listeners. So they're always going to side with Drake, and then Drake can talk about how he makes Pusha T relevant. So whatever, boring, who cares? I'm done with it.
But on the other hand, you've got Kanye. What's your answer here?
Dude, come on. Like, let's not even compare the two. Okay. I mean,
Kanye is an artist, Drake is a person. How about that?
And well, right now I'm struggling with how I come to terms with
Kanye.
No, Poopity Scoop. We do understand that had Kanye not voiced his opinions about
Dragon Energy.
Yes. Had he not mentioned that, he definitely would have had people in the club that weekend singing along to Lift Yourself, people screaming in the club, Poopity Scoop, like in a non-ironic way. Like had he not outed himself, like, he would have had people in the club saying Poopity Scoop.
I think you look at Kanye this way. This is a guy who has never had any kind of consciousness as far as his social status, because he's just always been this person who has, you know, gotten the money, gotten the success. And now he has now for the better part of what is this now? A decade we're going on longer of life with the biggest reality stars in the world. Like he doesn't understand things in terms of someone's politics or someone's, you know, social status. It's more just like, oh, this guy likes me and he's important, so that's good.
I'm in on that.
Like I could go deeper on that, but I'm far too damaged right now. My voice is still not completely back yet. Let's see here. Let me find another. Oh, God. William Corbin asking us, not a Detroit fan, what is one thing non-fans should know about the 2018 Lions? He says.
I'm not
sure.
The
one defining feature of this Lions team is blank.
I think it's still Matthew Stafford.
Well, what would you need to know about Matthew Stafford? Top six quarterback. Yeah, baby. People mad about that again.
We're going to get into Listcast pretty soon, right? Maybe in a month or so?
Probably less than that. I mean, because we need to kind of roll through those, and I want to throw in some fun ones too. So we need to get started on those probably next week if we can.
Listcast season, baby.
Listcast season, baby. Yeah, I'm trying to think what is the defining feat. We know nothing about this team right now.
Yeah, I mean, it's a new head coach. It's hard to say anything we know for sure, and that's why the only thing I know for sure is Matthew Stafford's a top 10, probably closer to six quarterback.
What do you know about this team, Ryan?
I know that Fred Durst served in the U.S. Navy.
I was going to bring that up because I posted that to the Slack and I should have absolutely let off this. I completely forgot I posted that in the Slack. I was going to lead off this segment saying happy Memorial Day to man of service Fred Durst and Adam Driver and Shaggy and Mystical. But I didn't.
Are these real?
Yes.
These are not real.
Yes, these are real.
They're not real. I got punked.
They are real. I went and Wikipedia'd each of them to make sure that these were real. Adam Driver served in the Marine Corps. Fred Durst served in the Navy. Shaggy served in the Marine Corps. Mystical was a combat engineer. We're off the rails now. Let's say we take one more question and get out of here, shall we? Just call it an early night. Okay. Man, I said I'd take one more and I'm just looking around and I'm just struggling. Oh, two more. Let's do two more. First off, let's go to Ryan Collins at Shafty Von Hack. What kind of fries are the best?
I think this might come off as a little controversial, but I love myself some steak fries.
I do. They're not my favorite, but I'm up there with you. I do like steak fries.
It's all about one surface area so that I can dip. Maximum ketchup with the steak fry. And then I like a meaty potato. It's got a lot of, you know, potato inside of it.
I think steak fries get a bad rap because you can screw up a steak fry really easily. But steak fries properly done are very good.
What's properly done? Do you like it more on the crispy side or more on the soft side?
You've got to have a bit of both. You've got to have crispy edges and a little bit of soft. But the problem is that if you don't cook them properly, you're just going to get a soggy mess. And that's what happens with a lot of steak fries, I think.
Yeah.
My answer is waffle fries over everything else. I've actually been going to this place, and Jeremy, you're going to have to come to it, a place in LA called Honeybird, which does fried chicken, but they have really good waffle fries. Really, really good waffle fries. Do you have an answer for this one, Ryan?
I don't know. I almost say sometimes it depends. Like, are we completely out as a group on shoestring fries or no?
No, I like shoestring. I'm fine with shoestring.
They're okay, but I feel like I gotta eat four at a time.
Yeah, that's how I eat fries though. Like, unless it's a big giant waffle fry, I am eating like multiple fries at a time. McDonald's, Wendy's, or regular fries. I think I'll even eat like two steak fries at a time. I just put a lot of fries in my mouth. Pause.
Are we on board with the waffle fries with malt vinegar? I do malt vinegar. You guys cool with that or no?
Yeah, I'm good with that. I think the thing about waffle fries, you can put anything you want on them.
They are a lot more versatile. I'll give you that. Like, I think when it comes to chili cheese fries, my favorite chili cheese fry is a waffle fry.
Did you see that picture I posted way back? This was back during, I think, my finals at USC. But there was a Chinese food, there was an Asian food truck here, and they did waffle fries, and I got half of it with like okonomiyaki Japanese sweet umami sauce topping plus like fish flakes on one half, and then the other half was like shredded cheese and Chinese black peppercorns. Those were some of the best waffle fries I've had in my life, and they were completely loaded.
That sounds incredible, Chris, but we've lost you completely. You're officially a Cali boy.
Wait and see. I might have to move again soon.
That dish literally just outed you. You're more Cali boy than Jeremy at this point.
It did, but it was also, you know what? That was insanely good, and now it's around lunchtime here in the West Coast, and I might be going to go try to find that food truck again. Especially since they had octopus balls there, too, and I want some of those. The last question we have here. Oh, actually, what's your final answer then, Ryan? Is it waffle fries?
Yeah. I'm in on the waffle fry.
Okay, cool. Last question here. John Whitaker, friend of the show. Who will win the Stanley Cup?
Give me the Washington Ovechkins.
Yeah, dude, I hate to say it, like, and I mean all these people that are on the Vegas bandwagon, losers, every last one of them. I'm so on board with trying to. I want Washington to win a cup. Like, I'm on board. I mean, Ovechkin, for all the credit that he gets for being like a one way player, I don't care. It's super fun to watch that guy play hockey.
Yep.
Vegas is gonna win. You're gonna hate it. They are going to rub it in everyone's face. Everyone's going to be bandwagoning. Oh, yeah. And then in 3 years, it's going to be an awful team repeatedly in the lottery, just like Carolina is. And no one is going to go to those games.
Dude,
that's what's going to happen. That's what's going to happen. Like, they're going to win the cup first. And you're going to be so mad. But you know what? Just desserts are coming.
And you know what? I totally agree with you, Chris, because let's keep this in mind. Vegas traded their first round pick this year, their second round pick next year, and their third round pick the year after that for Thomas Tatar, a guy who is not even dressing in every game that they're playing.
They are riding on like a bit like the season for Carlson.
Oh man, dude, here's the thing. I've been the biggest Wild Bill fan for the past like two seasons, and the year that he had, it made me love Vegas. And then you know who made me hate Vegas? Twitter.
There are suddenly a lot of new hockey fans out there. I do have one person on my Twitter feed. He lives in like Cleveland, and he was a guy who I think 3 years ago, if I had talked to him, he wouldn't even be able to name a single like sports player. And now all he talks about is how much he loves hockey.
And see, that's I don't mind if Vegas wins this cup, and I do think it's good for hockey, and I do think that it's fun to see an expansion team do this well. But to me, it's like, okay, they've had their fun. Now let's get Ovi the cup that he deserves.
Yeah,
and you Vegas guys can like just enjoy what you guys had because it was amazing.
Speaking of disrespected players because they don't have enough hardware, Jesus Christ. Yeah, I want Ovi to get one. But I know the tides of history, and I totally see a Carolina Hurricane situation happening with Vegas in that they are going to get one. That place, T-Mobile Arena, is going to be insanely loud. And then within spitting distance of this team, it's just going to turn into, because that's what happened with Carolina, right? They came down from Hartford. They won that cup. That barn was so damn loud. And where has Carolina been since? It's what's going to happen, because that's what the NHL knows how to do best. Y'all there?
Yeah, I just got nothing else to say.
Thank you for listening to the Pride Detroit PODcast. We are on iTunes and Stitcher. Our main theme was produced by Ryan Shepherd. You can find him on Twitter and on SoundCloud at I am Brian Shepherd. IamBrianSheppard. Thanks a lot to him. Check out his stuff. He's been great. He gave us Victory Monday, so go check him out. That's I Am Brian Shepherd. And thank you for everyone who keeps listening and makes us one of the greatest Lions podcasts possible. Y'all are awesome. See you, Starside.